The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Ago, when I was here, I asked a series of questions about awareness. And then I said the following week I would talk about awareness, but then I wasn't here. Sometimes absence is the best way to exemplify awareness. So I kind of forgot that I wasn't going to be here, so I apologize. But I thought I would follow up by trying to talk about this topic of awareness. It's a quality of mind, I suppose, that I'm very fond of. And I use the word awareness often enough, but I really don't know what it is. And so I'm not sure what I'm going to say, given that I don't know. And lately I've been liking to use the word awareness as a translation for the Buddhist word sati, which is usually translated as mindfulness. And partly it's nice to come up with a different translation because mindfulness is so popular and trendy. And it's kind of been co-opted and has particular meanings now that maybe are not the Buddhist ones, original ones. And also in my study of the teachings of the Buddha, I think that maybe the word English word awareness works a little better for how he uses the word sati than mindfulness does. Partly because mindfulness sometimes has the stronger associations with intentionality or willfulness, something you do, or someone who's engaged in doing some activity. Whereas awareness doesn't have to be so conscious exactly. It doesn't have to be something that we will or create. We can be aware, we're aware, but we're not attempting to be aware. As you know, maybe this is one of the exercises I gave 2 weeks ago. Some teachers are fond of giving the exercise of telling you to stop being aware. You know, just stop, cut it out. And most people find when they can't, because there's just so much. That's what the mind does. It is aware. And some Buddhist traditions, and certainly other religious traditions, put a tremendous emphasis on awareness, sometimes with its sibling word consciousness. And awareness or consciousness is kind of sometimes pointed to as some aspect of it as the heart of the religious message, that there's some cosmic consciousness or some ultimate consciousness or some essential consciousness, awareness, that somehow awareness, there's something about awareness which represents the true essence of a person. Some Buddhists will say it's the Buddha nature inside. And if you just have to realize this Buddha nature, this essential awareness, everything will be, you know, you understand your true nature, and if you understand your true nature, then everything will, I guess, be good or something. You'll be awake, enlightened or something. And I've been around the Buddhist scene for a long time to know that there are Buddhist teachers who use the word awareness in kind of mystical ways, as if it's ultimate. And I can't quite follow what they're saying. It sounds good. It kind of intuitively sounds like they're pointing to something really fantastic and wonderful and absolute. But, you know, I kind of like, am I supposed to intuit it? Is it, or what is it? What are they really talking about? Especially some Zen teachers I've heard who just like, you know, I'm not even sure they know what they're talking about. So awareness. So one of the reasons I like using the word as a substitute for mindfulness is that is because it can be seen as not so willful, not something you have to do. And in fact, that's the way the Buddha talked about sati, was something we rest in or we abide in, as opposed to something we do. We're not told by the Buddha to do mindfulness. We're told, or sati, we're told by the Buddha to abide in or rest in this thing, mindfulness or awareness. And so the word awareness, I think, works a little better for something you rest in, something you abide in, something you dwell in. And so what is awareness? One of the things I think that helps kind of narrow the field or makes it a little more interesting is that it seems that the human being can the brain can register perceptions while we're not conscious of it. And a classic experiment for this is people who have certain brain damage and they can't quite see somehow, in some way. And if you put a pencil in front of them, sometimes horizontally and sometimes vertically, and tell them to grab it, their hand knows exactly whether it's vertical or horizontal. But if you ask them, is it horizontal or vertical, they can't tell you. They don't know. So there's no conscious knowing. And does it make sense to say unconscious knowing, maybe, or unconscious registering or processing of that data is coming in? And somehow that behind the scenes is operating. When people talk about awareness in the religious context of religious practice, they're usually referring to what you can be conscious of, conscious awareness, conscious knowing of something, usually. And so that points out to the idea that the awareness that's being pointed to has an element of self-reflective awareness. We kind of know that we're aware. And so this idea that we can know that we're aware, it becomes a very important kind of aspect of whatever awareness might be. And because we can know we are aware, or aware that we are aware, some teachers love to do an exercise, which is, it's something like this. So I think most of you are listening to me. Some of you are perplexed already, and you're kind of thinking, you know, what is he talking about? And you know what you're thinking about. So you know something while you're sitting here. And then, do you know that you know? Do you know that you're aware of me talking? Do you know that you're aware of yourself kind of thinking about something else? if you know that you know, if you're aware that you're aware, that secondary awareness, what does that feel like? Or what are the qualities or the characteristics of that secondary awareness? And I think when some teachers point to do that exercise, what sometimes happens if you take that backward step to the secondary level of awareness, many people find that in that place they're less likely to be involved in the usual complicated way in which we know things. There's less judgment, less aversion, less straining. There's more space, there's more ease, there's more peace, there's more something in that secondary. If it isn't, then the teacher will ask you to take a step back and know that you know that you know. And then some people will complain or say, well, wait a minute, this can be infinite regress. And what good is that? Well, the point is not to do infinite regress. The point is, at some point, to be able to step away from the usual contraction or usual tightness or the usual self-preoccupation that seems to be entangled in how we know things. Because knowing is seldom innocent. And awareness, you know, in a sense, is seldom innocent. So, are you still with me enough? Since I don't know what I'm talking about, I should check. Are you at least interested? I'm talking about something which is essential to you know, our human being, right? So it should be somewhat interesting, even if I don't know what I'm talking about. So one of the things that's interesting about awareness is to use the analogy of seeing. So when you see with your eyes, what shape is your seeing? Have you ever thought about that? What shape is it? Most of you probably say, well, it's ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't compute, right? It's like saying, what color is seeing? I mean, what shape is seeing? But you could, perhaps, if language and people talk this way a lot, say, well, seeing takes the shape of the container in which we see in. So seeing in this room takes the shape of this room. You don't see beyond the walls of this room, so that's the edges of seeing right now. So seeing has a shape, like a box-like shape, right? And but if you go to a teeny little telephone booth, that's all you can see, a closet, then the shape of seeing is the size of the closet. If you go into a great cathedral, the shape of seeing is much bigger. Maybe if it's a big dome, its shape is kind of more spherical. And if you stand at the edge of the ocean and look out towards the horizon, or you look out up into space, then you can say seeing becomes infinite, becomes spacious, big, really big. I don't think most of us talk that way. It's maybe silly to talk that way, shape of seeing. But you can maybe imagine that you could maybe kind of imagine that they can kind of work, and you can get used to saying that perhaps and thinking that way. So then you can say same thing about awareness. What shape does awareness have? And maybe again you say it's silly, awareness doesn't have a shape. But it's very common for people who do something like meditation practice to describe their awareness as getting expansive. Sometimes they talk about a big awareness, a big mind. And if you have a sense of a big mind or awareness is quite expansive, it's also possible to be aware of when it's not that way. And sometimes it's possible to feel that my awareness is very constrained, very narrow, bounded almost, tight. So if we get deeply concerned with something, and we're kind of preoccupied by something, some people describe their attention gets kind of dark and focused and small. But if we're not preoccupied, if we're relaxed and open, then the awareness has a feeling of being more open. And in deep meditation, there's a feeling sometimes that awareness is boundless. It's infinite. It has no boundaries. And the boundaries, perhaps, sometimes have to do with the shape of our body. But in deep meditation, the shape of the body disappears. The sense of being in a body disappears because there's no sense of body, and sometimes in deep meditation. And so if there's no body to bound the mind or awareness, then it seems like it goes on. Can you touch the edges of awareness? Then, does awareness stop at your skin? Is it only in your brain? Where's the edges of awareness? And some people start feeling, when you ask those kinds of questions, awareness doesn't seem to have a particular boundary or limit. It's kind of amorphous, maybe because it's like, it's not a thing where the analogy of shape makes really good sense. But we can say, and I like to say that in some ways awareness takes the shape of whatever container it has. It's very fluid. It's like water that takes the shape of whatever container it has. And so so you can do all these different things with awareness. It's fascinating what you can do with awareness. Maybe because it's not a thing, and our sense of what awareness is maybe partly the use of our concepts, imaginations, our metaphors that we have. So, for example, it's possible to have a bird's eye view of something, to step back and have a big view. I could suggest to you that you kind of open up and become aware of this whole room. You get kind of a bird's eye view of the room, and your awareness kind of opens up widely. I could ask you tell you it's a really important, essential spiritual praxis to really focus on your thumbnail. And you can get, what's he talking about? And you get really studying that thumbnail really tightly. And the awareness gets very focused and very, very, very focused and very narrow, so much so that you're so fascinated in your thumbnail that you don't even know you're in a room anymore. The room disappears, people disappear. You're so narrowly... And sometimes awareness can be like a laser, just zooming in and being very... like a microscope. Sometimes it's like a macro lens. Sometimes we can imagine awareness is like you're standing far, far away in the back, like looking at the hillside, looking at something. And sometimes you can get really close to something and be intimate and close. And we use this, meditators will use this, with things like difficult emotions. People can have a lot of fear, and getting too close to the fear is very, very difficult. And so we'll say... Imagine how big do you have to be? How big does awareness have to be so that it's okay for you to be present for your awareness? Does it have to be, as big as this room? Some people say, oh no, the room is too small for my fear. Or anger, the room is too small for my anger. Well, how big do you have to be? And some people can imagine their awareness getting bigger. Say, it's as big as Redwood City. It's as big as the Bay Area. It's as big as California. And somehow when you say that, people's minds kind of get their awareness, their boundaries get their imagination gets bigger and bigger. And then at some point, the magic point comes where they're able to stay present for their fear and their anger that they couldn't when they felt really kind of entangled with and caught in it. So it's a way of playing with awareness to make it, you know. Or sometimes people are kind of removed from their experience, and a very important part of mindfulness practice is intimacy, getting really close. And the instructions might be the opposite, might be get really close, really feel it, and be really have yourself and awareness right up against what's there. So awareness is fluid, it's shifting, changeable. And then we have metaphors of things we do with our awareness. Or sometimes we call it the mind, but awareness, we jerk it around. You know, like some meditators are great at this sometimes. When the mind wanders off, you bring the mind back. You bring the awareness back. Where did it go? You know, this metaphor of going someplace is kind of just, you know, mind didn't go anywhere. Awareness didn't go anywhere. But we say bring it back. Or open the awareness up. There's all these metaphors, all these ideas that we can use. There's also the idea of depth and height connected to consciousness. You know, there's higher consciousness, higher awareness, and then people, some meditators prefer the word deep because it's, for some, them it's more intimate or something more cozy. You know, my awareness can really deep. When is it deep? When is it high? When is it big? When is it small? How much is that dependent on language, metaphors that we use? How much is it dependent for being bounded by a body? How much is it dependent by the tension that we're holding and the contraction we're holding, how awareness feels? So what is awareness? I don't know what it is, but it's certainly something we can play with. And perhaps different people will have a different idea of what awareness might be. What I've seen is among Buddhist teachers sometimes is making awareness really important. Making awareness so important it becomes kind of the central or most sacred or most important kind of religious or spiritual entity for them. So I've mentioned this earlier, so the idea that awareness is kind of like the essence of who we are. The true self is awareness. Our true nature is found in awareness is a common statement. And if we just realize our true nature, then everything will be enlightened and we'll be fine. And that's reifying. It's making awareness into a thing, supposedly, and seemingly, and people get attached to it. And what I've seen sometimes when people think that awareness is the point, they strain to be aware. They're trying to hold on to something, to be something. And sometimes I've done that in my meditation where I got an interest in an awareness, or I know that there's a kind of open, spacious knowing and awareness is possible. And so I try to focus on it, I try to be that. And it just kind of strains me to do that. And so what I have to do myself is I have to stop trying to look for awareness. I have to stop trying to focus on the nature of awareness itself, but just do my practice, get settled, relaxed, and then a settled, relaxed, present moment awareness, at some point, the feeling, the sense of being aware becomes stronger and stronger. Say it differently, this is an interesting aspect of awareness, is the more preoccupied you are by something, the less you're aware that you're aware. The more preoccupied you are, the less preoccupied you are, the more likely you can, in a relaxed way, know that you know, the self-reflective aspect of awareness. And so as we relax, our attachment and the grip we have on our thoughts, our stories, our emotions and feelings, and they're in a tremendous grip, we're caught up in things, as we relax that, what becomes more evident is the nature of knowing itself, awareness itself. And a very special moment happens in practice when the knowing of something is more interesting than what you know. Make sense to you? So I can know that this is a bell. I can know that this is a glass. I can know this is a floor. I can know this is a room. I can know all kinds of things, right? And what's constant through it all is the knowing. At some point, when I'm not so preoccupied, the sense of knowing, spacious, relaxed, effortless knowing, becomes clear by itself. And it becomes clear, more interesting than what I actually know. So I still know the bell. If I'm looking at the bell, I know the bell is here. But the fact that I know it is so special. The fact that I know it stands out in highlight. It's kind of a miracle, right? It's kind of amazing that after 5 billion years of evolution, we've arrived to this place where we know something. What is it? I don't even know what it is. But we know. And so at some point, as meditation goes deeper, or mindfulness becomes stronger, the quality of knowing, the aspect of knowing, the activity of knowing, independent of what the knowing knows, stands out in highlight. And at some point, that becomes more interesting than what we know. Until that point, most people are interested in what they know, what they're thinking about, what they're concerned about, what they're feeling. But when the attention shifts from the object of what we know to the act of knowing itself, then there's a kind of there can be a kind of radical shift in the mind. Because we realize that we find a peace or a joy or happiness, sense of well-being, independent of the things that we know. And then we don't have to always pursuing the things of the world, what we know, because we know there's something else. It's like we've been living in half the universe, and now we realize there's another half. It's like holding the striker. I can hold many things in my hand, and if I'm always focusing on what I'm holding, I never notice that how I'm holding, or the fact that I'm even holding, is an interesting thing. And as we know, it's a pretty remarkable instrument, the hand, right? And we should be in awe of these hands of ours. How did we end up with these kinds of amazing hands that can do so much? And to look at your hands and be in awe, as opposed to always looking at what your hand could hold, is to make this kind of shift with awareness as well. At some point, awareness stands out. So if we're not going to make that awareness, spacious, open, relaxed, present moment, knowing, awareness, ultimate, which some people like to do, what's the purpose of it in Buddhism? So my reference point is always, often to go back to the Buddha. I like kind of to go back and see what he has to say about it. And repeatedly, the Buddha did not want to take awareness or consciousness or knowing or some quality like that and make it absolute. Or absolute meaning that it has some kind of independent existence, permanent, abiding, independent, which in some Indian religions was how they saw consciousness. He wanted to see that consciousness, knowing, awareness was dependently arisen. It came together from cause and conditions that came to, you know, that probably in our brain, that came together with sense data. And it was born for a moment and then it dissolved. It was born for a moment and then dissolved. But still, he was aware there could be this sense of a very big, spacious, open mind, clear awareness. And rather than making it ultimate, what the Buddha was interested in was how we can focus on anything to realize its dependent arising, its conditioned nature, so that we can let go of our clinging. And it's the letting go of clinging which has the ultimate value in the teachings of the Buddha, not something. So no thing, no experience, no state of mind, no ultimate experience you can have is seen as the purpose. Rather, all kinds of wonderful spiritual states and experiences you can have are there, they serve the purpose to help us do the work of letting go. They're there to help us to understand how we cling, the nature of clinging, what we cling to, and to help us then to let go of it. Because it's in the letting go of clinging that we find our profound rest or profound peace or profound joy. It's tremendous. In the letting go, deep letting go, it's remarkable how beautiful and wonderful our hearts and minds can operate. It's not letting go into some kind of empty, you know, void, but rather it's letting go so that we can trust this human life in a profound way, and we can be wise about this life. In that deep letting go, it can be very, very deep, the letting go. It's so deep that the letting go lets go of everything. And for a moment, or for a period of time, awareness, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, not only does it no longer have any object in it, awareness without an object, but awareness lets go of itself, and there's not even any awareness there. But if there's no object and no awareness, and we use our ability for intuition, for metaphor, for understanding, for somehow grokking that, some people will say, well, that which knows or that there was no consciousness, that's ultimate. That's it. And I don't know if we need to do that. We don't need to do anything. If you let go and are at peace, just enjoy it. And to try to then define what consciousness is or what the nature of enlightened consciousness is kind of like trying to touch your right elbow with your right hand. You know, you know it's there. You know there's some kind of awareness there, some kind of knowing there, some kind of in that freedom. But you can't quite touch it. You can't quite define it. Can't quite get to it. That's how I think. That's my experience. But you can still kind of intuit. You kind of know it's there. But what is it? I don't know what it is. And luckily, I don't feel like I don't have to know what it is. I just have to use my awareness enough to help me arrive in the present moment, be here, begin understanding what's actually going on here in a clear way, until a point where the awareness practice helps me to let go. To let go of my resistance, my clinging, my fear, my anger, all the things that keep me kind of contracted or constrained or limited. And then let go. Easy enough to say, but so in my understanding of the early teachings of Buddhism, the emphasis is never on attaining an experience, never an ultimate thing or state, but rather it's the absence of clinging which is considered to be ultimate. And some people find it very unpleasant to have, or unsettling even, to have the religious ultimate of a tradition be the absence of something, the absence of clinging, because we really want it to be something. And so one of the things that people pick up then is consciousness or awareness. This must be that. So that makes some sense? Yeah? No? if anything, I hope that it would spark your curiosity about what in the world have you been doing all these years? You've been using this awareness thing for a long time. And perhaps you haven't really taken a good look at it to understand what it is and what am I doing when I'm aware? What is this thing? And maybe if you take a deeper look at awareness, that when you're aware that maybe there's something important to discover there that supports you, helps you. So we have about 10 minutes. And so now, anything anybody wants to ask about this topic?
It was awareness is not innocent, or knowing is never innocent, or something like that. I don't know if you remember what you said, yeah. But I didn't quite follow.
Awareness is seldom innocent. Often, when if awareness is kind of like knowing something, aware of something, then sometimes we bring along a lot of baggage with the awareness, and it's so closely, so intimately tied, it's hard to separate them out. So, if I want something, my seeing, I'm looking around trying to see how I can get that thing. Or if I'm afraid, I'm seeing through the filter of my fear. Or we have bias or prejudice that we see through, that we're aware through. And it's very hard to tease apart our bias or our prejudice from the act of seeing itself.
So by innocent, you mean free from bias and fear and prejudice? And
so it can be innocent. Awareness can be innocent if the mind is relaxed enough and open enough or clear enough. So it either doesn't have bias or agendas as part of it, or it's clear enough that we see the agendas and the bias are distinct from the awareness itself. But that takes a strong mindfulness to see. Mostly we walk around life, the awareness we have in ordinary life is holding hands with desires and or taking direction. Mm-hmm. Makes some sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So straight back behind you with the mic, please.
It's kind of along the same line that when you're talking about secondary... Sort of along the same line as you were speaking of here, it struck me when you spoke of secondary awareness before, it's like the mind is going along and saying that this is a secondary awareness. It's like there can be a third level, a fourth level, a fifth level, or infinite, until the mind releases. And the awareness is just flowing rather than measured at a secondary level or this level.
Right. So that's one of the reasons some teachers like to give this exercise, that very exercise, know that you know. And for some people, that's enough to kind of loosen things up and open up. And some people have to go further, and some people, when they go further, it's like at some point...
You know that you know.
And some people just end up with a headache. Because they're trying so much. It gets too intellectual at some point, and you get tied up in all the effort. But yeah, that kind of exercise tends to work best when someone has been meditating a long time, and then it's easier to settle into it, relax into that secondary knowing, rather than straining to try to get it. If you take someone off the street who's been running around being busy and upset about whatever, and you say, "Do you know that you know?" "Yes." "What is that knowing like?" And they're going to they're going to strain. I'll get to it soon. Let me try. When someone who's deeply relaxed has a much more easy access to it in a way that's not like you're talking about.
Yes, but as soon as you register that it's secondary, it interferes.
Yes. So it's like touching, you're trying to, So that's why there's a certain kind of conceptualization or a certain kind of focusing of the mind which makes it difficult. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like if you are really relaxed and then you want to highlight to your friends that you're relaxed. Over here, look at this. It's like suddenly you're not so relaxed anymore. So it's a little bit like that. If you can be aware of a spacious, open, relaxed consciousness, awareness, but as soon as your mind focuses on it, the mind has to narrow, and then it vanishes. So it's kind of like, have you ever seen these wonderful puzzles with those pictures with the dots? You have all these dots, I don't know what they're called, and you have to kind of cross your eyes, and then they line up. Some people can't do it, but some people, they just can't do it, but you have to sit, look at these dots, and dots, 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 and then suddenly the dots swim, and they line up, and you see this beautiful three-dimensional object on the paper. And you kind of hold it there, but you kind of have to not try too hard either, right? As soon as you try, you can't do it, but you can't not try, and so this kind of strange kind of, not trying goes on. It's great. There's two mics, so it should be a green light on it.
Hello.
Okay. I was wondering if you could try to make some of what you're saying a little more concrete, maybe through like an example in everyday life in which it would be useful to parse out the distinction between awareness and then awareness of awareness, and then how it would be useful when you're caught in a situation or struggling?
Yes. I mean, sometimes it's not accessible in big struggle, but it can be. So I don't know if this works as I've tried using this as an example sometimes. If you're in a driving your car and you're preoccupied and caught up in something, it seems so important what you're thinking about. And then you have a near accident. I mean, it's really close. You realize how dire it was going to be, but in that few moments, you don't have an accident, but you know the adrenaline goes or everything stops. You know, and you kind of forget what you were concerned about, and then you continue driving down the freeway, and then you're really present, and you're really aware that you know, like, wow, you know, I'm alive, I'm aware. And you know that you're aware. Wow, this is really a whole different state. My mind is open, and so you feel that way. Or if you go visit someone who's dying, sometimes they're on their deathbed, and you go visit them. You go into the room. It's peaceful. It's quiet, and it's so poignant. It's so kind of powerful, that kind of situation, that some people say that in there, the sense of being aware is so palpable in their mind, and they know that they're aware. It's like, wow, this is really something. I've never had such a strong sense of presence of awareness as I have sitting there with my loved one at their deathbed. So your question was, how can I use that in everyday life? It's like that. If a person has a sense of relaxing into awareness, there has to be some secondary knowing that you're aware. There's knowing that it doesn't have to be so conscious, but the awareness has to be strong enough that you know that you know. Someone asks you, "You know?" Yeah, of course I knew. And so there has to be some sense of it. And if it's clear enough, some people have the ability to relax into it, or open up into that, or it gives them access to a different kind of relaxation in the mind, so that you're in the middle of something. And you have a place to go and open up into and not be so preoccupied with the details that are happening around you. Does that help at all? Does that get close to it? Or
getting there?
Getting there, yeah. I can say almost anything tonight because I said I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not sure what it is. And I think it's okay not to know what awareness is, because maybe awareness is not a thing. Some people have a sense of awareness being a field, a solid field or a big open field or something, or a thing. Some people don't. It might be a little bit like taking a flame, a torch, in the dark and spinning it really fast. And what you see is a circle. But you know that it's not a circle. You know the flame is in different points, but it's going so fast. And it could be that what we call awareness or consciousness, when it's very strong and spacious and open, is not really a thing. It's the harmonious, working of multiple mental processes working all together. And when they all work in harmony and fast, they have the appearance of being like a unitary field of knowing or awareness. But maybe that's just kind of an illusion. Who knows? Maybe. When we have that, and that some people say that certain disorders are disorders of that harmonious working of all the mental processes that make up consciousness. Some people have said that maybe epilepsy represents that something's not quite working in harmony anymore. Neurons are firing differently. So I don't know how I got to that. Yes. Oh, the doctor. You might know.
No, not necessarily. No, I don't really pretend to know much either about this. But I read an article by Eckhart Tolle where he said, kind of like what you alluded to earlier, he said awareness is the mind of God. And you said earlier in your talk, like a lot of people kind of propagate that. And I always thought, like to me, I guess I kind of bought into that, like moment-to-moment awareness is really important in Buddhist practice. And I always just thought that my mindfulness wasn't really that strong, because it's hard to stay with it for a long period of time. And I've kind of wondered, and again, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I wondered about the concentration part. If, like, for example, the concentration would allow a person to stay in their mindfulness, like the right concentration of the Eightfold Path, and if that would allow for, like, more continuous moment-to-moment awareness.
Yes.
And I just wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah. Mindfulness and concentration go hand in hand. And so as concentration becomes stronger, it's mindfulness becomes more continuous. But also, concentration is a beautiful quality of mind. As the mind gets very concentrated, then it's possible to be aware without any effort. And normally, if the mind is distracted and going off and thinking about tomorrow and yesterday, and you have to keep coming back, and then at some point you're able to stay present, but you have to keep making some effort to stay. At some point when the concentration is strong enough, no effort is needed whatsoever, and you're just there, effortlessly present and aware. And then it's continuous for the duration, not forever. Last one, and then we'll stop.
So I'm struck by your statement that you know that you know, but you also know that you don't know what awareness is, and you're very comfortable with that. So that just strikes curiosity in me.
Why should I not be comfortable? Why should I be uncomfortable?
Why am I so uncomfortable?
No, you're why are you so uncomfortable?
I'm glad that you are, and I'd like to be.
Oh, and why are you uncomfortable?
Because I feel like my conditioning, I think, talking about dependent origination, is that I should know. The things that I don't know, I need to figure out.
No.
And if I can't figure them out, then there's a big problem. And that's a big part of what practice has offered me, and why I'm so grateful to hear you say what you're saying tonight, that I know, and I know that I don't know, then it's all okay.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that, because I'm trying to figure out that it's okay to not know. And I haven't gotten there quite yet.
Yeah. Not only is it okay, but there's also Buddhist teachers who, that's one of their primary practices, is don't know. Or the beginner's mind is very important. And in fact, thinking about what I was going to say today, about what I don't know, I was going to talk about the importance of, for the purposes of mindfulness practice, not knowing is important, or putting aside our preconceived ideas is very important. So maybe I can save that for next week or some other time. So thank you all, and if this talk was meaningless to you and confusing and you're kind of spaced out, that's completely fine. It's okay, too. It's completely fine. But if it was interesting, great. And we'll get around to more concrete things. Thank you.